Support for the Florida Roundup comes from ABC Fine Wine and Spirits, family-owned and operated since 1936. Guests can shop any of ABC's 125 Florida stores and get curbside service through abcfws.com.
Welcome to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. My co-host Melissa Ross is off this week. It's been 4 years since a gunman killed 17 students and injured 17 others at a high school in Parkland, Florida. Next month, we'll make 6 years since a gunman killed 49 people and hurt 53 others at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando. In the past 2 weeks, two other mass shootings, one killing 10 black people in Buffalo, New York, the second killing 19 children and two teachers in Texas, has thrust gun violence back into the political arena. There was no material legislative response after the Pulse nightclub massacre regarding guns. After the Parkland school shooting, Florida lawmakers did pass a change to the state gun laws, poured millions of dollars into school security, and led to a red flag law allowing judges to take away someone's guns under certain circumstances. We begin this program this week talking about Florida's response to a school mass shooting 4 years on. What's changed? What hasn't? What lessons can still be learned after the Texas tragedy? What's security like in your child, your grandchild, niece, nephew, cousin's school, gun sales, background checks, mental health resources, ammunition, early warning systems? What is the approach to address mass shootings and overall gun violence? 305-995-1800 is our statewide phone number to join our conversation live on this Friday afternoon. 305-995-1800. You can also send us your thoughts on Twitter. Our handle is at Florida Roundup. One response in Florida after the Parkland tragedy was a focus on school safety. A law passed in the wake of that shooting at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School requires school districts to have a safety officer at every public school. Chief Edwin Lopez oversees the nearly 500 police officers in Miami-Dade Public Schools.
Whether it's active shooter training, active assailant training, or mental health training, our school resource officers are equipped with the necessary skill set to really work collaboratively with the school administrators, teachers and staff to really address concerning behaviors.
A school resource officer failed to stop the school shooting in Parkland, and there are questions now about how law enforcement responded to the school shooting this week in Texas. Gregory Tony was appointed sheriff in Broward County by Governor Ron DeSantis after the governor removed the sheriff who oversaw the response to the school shooting in Parkland. This week, Sheriff Tony said he was frustrated by the lack of legislation to prevent gun violence.
We have members in Congress who have absorbed these shootings going back to Sandy Hook, and yet nothing has changed.
Tony says he supports universal background checks for people buying guns. Now, Florida lawmakers may take up an effort to expand gun laws in future legislative sessions. In April, Governor DeSantis made this pledge.
Well, the one thing that I wanted the legislature to do, and I think we will do it, I can't tell you exactly when, sure. but I'm pretty confident that I will be able to sign a constitutional carry in the law.
Again, that was the governor in April. Now, constitutional carry is shorthand for allowing people who legally own a gun to carry it in public, hidden or in plain sight, without any additional permits or training. 305-995-1800. Again, our phone number, 305-995-1800. One of the architects of Florida's response in the weeks after the Parkland school shooting was Jared Moskowitz. At the time, he was a Democratic state representative whose district included Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. He's a graduate of that school. Today, he's a Broward County commissioner, and he's running for the United States Congress. Commissioner Moskowitz, welcome back to Florida Public Radio. Thanks for your time today.
Tom, it's good to be with you.
I wish the topic was something better, but it is in the news here, certainly, and you did play a pivotal role in the response after Parkland. Are schools safer in Florida because of the changes that were made?
Yeah, Tom, you and I have been talking about this a long time. I remember coming on and talking about this in the wake of the shooting. But the answer to your question is yes, schools are safer as a result of the law we passed in Florida. We raised the age to 21 to buy any gun in the state of Florida from 18. We mandated three-day waiting periods. We instituted red flag laws. Those red flag laws, Tom, have been used 5,800 times in the last 4 years. If 0.5% of those worked, we'd be preventing 25 parklands. And then we put hundreds of millions of dollars into mental health and school resource officers. So the answer is yes, kids are safer than they were before Parkland.
Are there still lessons to be learned in Florida from the tragedy this week in Texas?
Well, unfortunately, I think what we're starting to see as more information comes out is the same mistakes that were made in Parkland were made here in Texas. You're talking about the SRO in Parkland.
The school resource officer, security resource officer, SRO.
Yeah, stayed outside the building in Parkland. It still infuriates me. And that seems to what happened here in Texas, that the police stayed outside the building. That is not the training when it comes to a mass shooting. And so, look, there's a lot of details we don't know. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of information that still has to come out in Texas. But let's be clear. In Broward County, the sheriff, the SRO who didn't go in the building is gone. The sheriff is gone. And the school superintendent is gone. So you want to talk about failure? There was massive government failure. The FBI had two hits on the shooter in Parkland and did nothing about it. So when government fails in that sort of way, it can have a massive, it could add to the tragedy. We'll wait for more details to come out in Texas, but there are signs that are eerily familiar to what we're seeing in Texas that happened in Parkland.
That's focused on the law enforcement response, an important focus. Certainly it was a focus post-Parkland. It will be and should be a focus, as you mentioned, here in the Texas tragedy. There are familiar calls today for gun legislation and school security, calls that echoed certainly here in Florida more than 4 years ago after Parkland, echoed perhaps differently in Florida than they are echoing in Texas today. The Texas governor, Greg Abbott, has dismissed calls for gun restrictions in his state. Florida has been a gun-friendly state, passed that age restriction that you mentioned, Commissioner Moskowitz, and okayed $400 million of school security. Listen back, Commissioner, to how you explained this to me 6 weeks after the Parkland shooting.
There were enough members of the legislature that were impacted by the idea that this happened, a Sandy Hook sort of event happened in the state of Florida. I think they were impacted by the students coming and talking to them.
I had asked you about what were the circumstances in the politics and in the policy that provided for the opportunity for a legislative response. Are today's circumstances any different?
Well, I mean, Tom, the circumstances were the worst they could be. I had a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and Rick Scott as governor, who nobody has ever confused with being a moderate or a liberal. The Senate president, the Speaker of the House, Rick Scott, A-plus rated members of the NRA. The former NRA president of the country is the chief NRA lobbyist here in the state of Florida. What was different? There were a lot of factors. One was the parents that crisscrossed the country, the students that came up to Tallahassee. But I also brought Republican leadership to the school. I made them see what it looks like when a school has bullet holes through the window, when backpacks are piled up outside, when homework is scattered in the parking lot, when you look down the hallway and you see blood against the wall. And I said to them, this has to be different. It would be too easy. It's easy to do nothing. It would be easy for you to issue the response that many people expect you to issue. But what if this time you showed them it could be different? And I said, you got kids. This is Parkland. This is the lowest crime city in the state of Florida. If it can happen in Parkland, this is coming to your neighborhood. And I, along with others, worked very hard, used every relationship, every tool, every lever. And thankfully, they listened. They did listen. Look, there was more I wanted to do. I want to ban assault weapons. I wanted to get that in the bill. But I will tell you, the things that we got in that bill, Greg Abbott can do. And he's dead wrong for not trying to do it, because it is saving lives.
We're speaking with Jared Moskowitz, former Democratic state representative of Parkland, a Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School graduate, a congressional candidate, and current Broward County commissioner. I want to ask here, Commissioner Moskowitz, you are running for Congress, and the U.S. House passed two background check bills last year. One would close the loophole allowing for gun sales if a background check is not completed within 3 days, and the second would expand background checks for all gun sales, including gun show sales. Do you support these proposals?
I do. Yeah, I support H.R. 8. I support the red flag laws. I support banning assault weapons. But I also support the idea of not the perfect being the enemy of the good, meaning let's get what we can get done right now and then continue to fight for more. We have to do something. Tom, I continue to think about Parkland. I think about it every day. I think about being in the room when the parents were told where their kid was in the building. I didn't hear crying. I heard screaming. It haunts me. I think about the fact that we can't promise parents in this country that when you drop your kid off at school, you get to pick them up. What a failure of all of us that we can't deliver that promise to parents. And I think about that. I think about that Jen Guttenberg, Fred Guttenberg's wife, was with my four-year-old around the corner from Douglas, who was in preschool at the time. They went into lockdown. She put my kid in a closet and was keeping my kid safe when her daughter was killed. My four-year-old, he's now the age of the kids that got killed in Texas.
You mentioned the red flag law that was approved, passed, put into law, and implemented here in Florida after the Parkland tragedy, leading to more than 5,000 cases of law enforcement being able to take away guns or weapons from those with a judge's permission. It's been used, as you mentioned, thousands of times here in Florida. Would you support a federal red flag law?
Yes, I support a federal red flag law. In fact, there were Republican senators that proposed that in the wake of Parkland and other shootings. And so, look, there's not one solution. It isn't just a single point of entry. It isn't just raising the age to 21. It isn't just red flag laws. It isn't just background checks, right? But it is all of those things together. But we gotta at least start making progress. Here is what I can guarantee. And you know this, and I know it, and everyone listening knows it, that if we continue to do nothing, this is going to continue to happen. It's some high school in Parkland, then it's an elementary school in Texas. Soon it'll be some school in New Jersey. It'll be some school in Maryland. It'll be some school in Louisiana. It'll be some school in Illinois. This is coming to every neighborhood. And until we act as the United States, the 50 states, rather than piecemealing it, we're not going to solve this as a country.
Jared Moskowitz, former Democratic State Representative, current Broward County Commissioner. Commissioner Moskowitz, thanks for spending your time today with us on Florida Public Radio.
Thanks, Tom.
We will be hearing from a Republican senator, state senator here in Florida in a matter of moments. We want to hear from you, though, 305-995-1800. And also send us your thoughts at Florida Roundup on Twitter. Jamie sent us this tweet: implement a heavy tax on all gun sales. Use the money to hire and station security officers at every entrance to every school. Install metal detectors at each door, too. Jamie writes, my kids are more important than my guns. I'd support and pay a tax. At Florida Roundup on Twitter. Mitchell has been listening in from Palatka. Go ahead, Mitchell. You're on the radio.
I've been saying for quite a long time that the real key to destroying the access of this sort of thing to the mentally deranged is the control of the ammunition. If you forced everyone that is buying ammunition to turn in an empty shell matching what you're trying to buy, it would so confuse these would-be suicide that they would forget about that kind of thing. We need to put markers on every center fire shell in such a way that it can't be removed without opening the shell, that indicate where the shell was bought and who bought it, so that every single time somebody's killed with a centerfire shell, they would be traceable to the person that bought it and where it was bought from.
Mitchell, we got the idea there. Focus on the ammunition. Trace and register ammunition is Mitchell's idea. Manny Diaz Jr. is with us now here on the Florida Roundup. He is a state senator and soon to be education commissioner. Senator Diaz, your appointment effective June 1st. Thanks for spending some time here with us today. Much appreciated.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure to be on with you.
Senator, what are the lessons for Florida schools in the wake of the Texas tragedy this week?
Well, unfortunately, when you have these incidents, it forces you to self-reflect. And again, the good thing about Florida is since the tragedy at Marjory Stoneman Douglas, the legislature has continued to review and look at how to improve the legislation and the laws that have been passed, including this past session, with a more unified system statewide of training and procedures. And I think that the lessons, the main lesson is that obviously it brings this issue back to the forefront, because with COVID, we've had a myriad of other issues that have been at the forefront. But the good thing is that the legislature has kept its eye on the ball and continued to push forward. And we're in a much better place than we were, obviously, before the Parkland tragedy here in Florida now.
One change that was made in Florida after Parkland was the creation of the Guardian program, allowing school employees to carry guns on campus after receiving training. What has the adoption been like for this program in Florida?
You know, despite the fear that was going on when that was being debated, what we have seen is that it's been an effective way to assure that we have somebody responsible and trained. And that the training, I think, is the key piece to that, because it was glossed over a lot of times in the debate of the requirement for the personnel to be trained, and not only in gun safety, but in the ability to respond to an active shooter. And it has allowed for us to augment forces, especially in areas, in rural areas where there may not be the number of law enforcement officers or the distances between campuses are greater. Obviously, when you have metropolitan areas and you have some of our school districts have their own police force, that makes it easier, and the density makes it easier for coverage with these schools. But one of the things we put in place is having a law enforcement safety officer at each campus.
Right. I according to the Department of Education's website today, 45 counties in Florida have approved the Guardian program. Do you know how many guardians have gone through the training and were eligible, for instance, as this school year wraps up, to carry a firearm on campus?
I don't have the updated numbers on that, but what I do know is that you've seen a kind of a stabilizing force when it comes to the fear that initially existed, and that a lot of the districts have seen the value in being able to augment the force. Now, a lot of them have used retired law enforcement, people who have law enforcement training, and additionally go through the Guardian training. And I think that's been very effective in augmenting the force and providing these districts the ability, because, you know, with the shortage of employees, we faced also shortage of law enforcement officers for a period of time, and having to augment the force. This has been helpful.
Senator Diaz, stick with us here. We're going to take a short break, continue the conversation with Senator Manny Diaz after this.
Support for the Florida Roundup comes from ABC Fine Wine and Spirits, Florida family owned and operated since 1936, and a proud supporter of public radio. ABC Fine Wine and Spirits, always be celebrating.
We're back on the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Thanks for listening. My co-host Melissa Ross is off this week. We're talking about the response 4 years ago to the school shooting in Parkland, Florida, in light of the school shooting this week in Texas. Senator Manny Diaz Jr. is with us, current state senator and soon to be education commissioner here in the state of Florida. Senator Diaz, tweet from Dan says, experts say we can prevent school shootings by building social emotional skills like conflict resolution, stress management, and empathy for classmates. Dan asks, any move on the part of the Department of Education in Florida to allow social emotional learning in math textbooks? This was a story from several weeks ago, of course, when the Department of Education, prior to you coming in, was rejecting several math textbooks for including, among other things, social emotional learning.
Yeah, and I think, look, the mental health component of our schools needs to be done through the mental health procedures, through the mental health structure that we have in our schools. I think it's a separate conversation from math books, and those type of things that we have continued to push after Parkland, especially with making sure that our students and that the mental health professionals that are trained to deal with that are the ones in the right place, both with the referral system, both with the team approach to making sure that our students have mental health services. That's where it should be located. That's where it should be focused.
So no change in approach that you anticipate under your leadership with math textbooks and the criticism from the agency regarding some that were submitted for curriculum that included social emotional components?
No, math books need to be about math, and that's why we have different components. And again, it is important that we have our mental health professionals working with our teachers and with our students on implementing those strategies to deal with the issues that come up at every school.
Senator, we spoke with you in late April, just several weeks ago, when you were first nominated as education commissioner. I want to listen back to something that you said when we asked you what your top priority was.
Number one thing is here, we're facing a teacher shortage. There's an issue with recruitment and retention.
The teacher shortage you identified is that big priority for you as you are the incoming commissioner in the Department of Education. How does school violence like what we've witnessed in Texas affect teacher recruitment and teacher retention?
I think without a doubt, it's a component that will affect those people that are looking to come into the profession. And that's why I think the legislature will continue to review the school safety legislation and laws that are put in place so that we can continue to refine the systems that we have put in place to assure not only the safety of our students, but the safety of our teachers coming into the profession that are in these buildings.
The dean of Florida International University's School of Education asked in an editorial that was published this week in the Miami Herald, should we add firearm training to FIU's teacher preparation curriculum? How would you respond to the dean's question?
You know, that's a difficult question, because the way that the Guardian program was set up, it was set up so that you have people identified by the superintendent, by the school districts who are capable, have the temperament, and you know, those people on the ground know their staff best. So I don't think it would be necessary to do it in college. I think that's something that would be done at the district level and in conjunction with the Guardian program to make sure that the number one, the person has to be identified to be suitable for the job, and number two, the person has to receive the proper training. So I think that part is best left to the professionals that are running these programs of training and after the people have been identified.
You'll become the education commissioner June 1st, no longer a state senator. However, the governor has talked about what he calls this constitutional carry idea, open carry or concealed carry in public with no additional permit after a gun purchase. If you were going to still be in the state Senate in the next legislative session, if a piece of legislation came up like that, how would you greet it?
Well, I'm supportive of the Second Amendment, but I won't be there to see that because I'll be in a different capacity.
Right. But would you support that kind of permitless or constitutional carry?
It all depends on what the bill looks like. And I think there's factors that have to be put into that, but I am a proponent of the Second Amendment.
Senator Diaz, thanks for your time. Always appreciate you taking some time out to speak with us today.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
You too, sir. 305-995-1800. Sophia in Fort Lauderdale. We want to hear from you. Go ahead, Sophia. Sophia in Fort Lauderdale, you still with us? We will hear from Vicky in Fort Lauderdale next. Go ahead, Vicky. You're on the radio.
Hi, good afternoon. Good afternoon. Mm-hmm. So I had three things that I wanted to say, but I want to specifically kind of respond to what Senator Manny Diaz was saying. And what you were discussing, that SEL program, that social emotional learning, mm-hmm. Governor Ron DeSantis is also trying to get rid of. That is something that has existed for many years. And there are many professionals in our educational system using that program to help the mental health of the kids. Social emotional learning is critical to implement in families, in our jobs, in the written educational system, in the oral part of the educational system, with teacher interaction with students, yeah. with all of the people involved in our education, it is important. I found a chart on that in a high school where I was helping after a hurricane several years ago, and it is something that every school should have, and it should not be negated. And I am very disappointed and angry that somebody who is going to represent us in the educational system is not going to support this. And this is a red flag. Those red flag laws that you're talking about need to be applied to our senators, our legislators, and we have to listen carefully to the details and read between the lines for what each of them is saying and representing. Now, my point that I was originally going to call in for is to...
Vicky, pardon the interruption. Please, we want to hear them, but I want to get to some other callers. But to go ahead, please.
And vote.
One more time, please.
To learn your facts, your numbers, the names, connect the dots, to teach to in your daily conversations with people about information, to not be afraid of voicing your concerns, to counter disinformation in local Spanish radio stations like Radio Cambia and Actualidad, and to vote. Update your voter status, register people to vote by mail, get yourself and get your voters to the polls.
Vicky, appreciate your voice there from Fort Lauderdale here on the Florida Roundup. Let's hear from Sunrise, Joanne on line 5. Go ahead, Joanne. Nice to hear from you.
Yes. Hi, good day. When someone's buying, purchasing a gun for, their own protection, et cetera, they go through the normal channels and 99%, they do not have any ill will, right? So the background check will work for them. But what about those getting illegal guns? What do we do about that? I hear a lot about background checks. What do those background checks entail? Because this 18-year-old apparently got the gun legally, and we find that when they go out and commit these heinous acts, they did go through a background check and they bought it legally. So two fronts, what do we do about those trying to get the legal gun? Mm-hmm. And apparently the background checks are not working because they're getting these guns legally, and then they're committing these acts. So what exactly do those background checks entail? We hear a lot about it, but nobody says, step 1, 2, 3, what does it entail? Because they're either slipping through the cracks or something is desperately wrong. Thank you.
Joanne, we appreciate you from Sunrise, and thank you for asking those important questions here. As the conversation about guns, about mental health, about school hardening, about response in our communities, our state and our country will continue regarding gun violence. The election season will be a season of firsts for Florida. It is the first statewide election since the legislature passed new voting rules, the first for a new election police unit created by state law, and the first for Florida's new elections chief, Secretary of State Cord Byrd. This week, Byrd did not directly answer when asked if he believed President Joe Biden legitimately won the election.
He was certified as, Stevie was certified as the president, and he is the president of the United States. There were irregularities in certain states. But what I'm concerned about is I'm the Secretary of State of Florida. I'm not the Secretary of State of Wisconsin or Pennsylvania or Arizona. That's up to their voters.
Florida's new chief elections officer met for the first time this week with the 67 county election supervisors ahead of the August primary and then, of course, the general election in the fall. Gary Fineout, political reporter for Politico, is back with us here on Florida Public Radio. Gary, always great to have you share your reporting with us. How did that qualified answer from the new Florida Secretary of State about the election of Joe Biden go over with election supervisors?
That was during an availability with reporters that mm-hmm. which was held shortly before he actually talked to them. He didn't say that to the group when he addressed them in his speech. I think there were some supervisors who, when told of those remarks, I mean, they weren't thrilled with the comment. The supervisors I talked to, there was no one who was outwardly critical of Secretary Byrd. I think that they're sort of, you know, trying to figure out what the relationship is going to be like in the run up to the election, because they had a good relationship with the former secretary, Laura Lee. So I think they're trying to, the sense that I got from the ones that I talked to, you know, was that they're waiting to see what happens.
And what are they, how do they characterize it now? Secretary of State Byrd comes from the Capitol. He was a state representative, a Republican state representative, before Governor DeSantis tapped him earlier this month to fill in that vacancy at the Secretary of State level. So how would you, you know, what's that early relationship like, Gary?
Well, apparently he did meet over the weekend. He met with Wesley Wilcox, who's the supervisor of elections for Marion County, and who's the outgoing president of the state association. And he met with Mark Early, the supervisor for Leon County, who's the income president. And, you know, Mark Early characterized it as a, you know, frank and open discussion that they had with him. And, you know, he said he was optimistic. I know that Alan Hayes, who is a former Republican legislator from Lake County, who's the supervisor in that county, and Alan Hayes, who's been very outspoken that at least in Florida, there was no problems with the election in his mind. He has said he's hopeful that Byrd, coming from a legislative arena, coming from the policy arena, I think his hope is that, well, it might be good to have somebody in the Secretary of State's position who sort of has a relationship with the legislature. Because I think the last couple of years, you at Hayes especially, who was a former, you know, very conservative Republican lawmaker, he's gone up there the last couple of years and has basically said things that the legislature has done, he's kind of blasted them over it. Just said that they were not needed, unnecessary, is going to cause problems.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, this past session, they passed another election bill, and the initial version, Hayes just said was going to create confusion and voter chaos. And what's interesting is that the part of the bill that he was most objecting to, they actually took out, and they agreed to do a study instead of just going ahead and putting into law.
Yeah, there's been a lot of changes. Gary Fineout with Politico with us. Gary, stand by. I want to remind folks that you are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. When voters do vote this summer, there's going to be that new elections police force unit. The new department will investigate election fraud complaints, but some voting rights groups are pretty nervous about the potential for intimidation. Listen to Gadsden County Commissioner Brenda Holt. Gadsden County is a majority Black county.
The term elections police is intimidating in itself, because the citizens don't know if there are going to be officers at the polling place. There are several things they do not know about this process.
Dr. Lana Atkinson is with us now, director of Florida State University's Leroy Collins Institute. Dr. Atkinson, welcome to Florida Public Radio. What's the intent of this election police force?
Yeah, we don't know yet. It's uncertain. We have, a place for 31 positions or something like that. So there's a lot of boots to fill, so to speak. We don't know what that's going to look like. We're in a wait and see pattern.
Well, as you wait and see, what considerations should there be for how the agency operates and approaches this first primary election since its founding and first general election coming up in the fall?
Well, to follow up on the remarks of the legislator, I think that that's really important that we not see, you know, a presence of the police, for example, in the precincts. I don't think that would be very good for turnout or just sort of mixing things that we shouldn't be mixing. But there's no indication at the moment that that's what is going to happen. So we're not clear what those people are going to be doing, whether they're just going to be investigating questions that people mm-hmm. bring before them. I mean, certainly if we look back to the last time anybody put in a sort of election police force, the closest thing would be Bush in 2004. He had a special force in the DOJ to look at
Department of Justice.
Yes. And he couldn't find any. So that's the last time that went somewhere.
Yeah.
And that didn't go anywhere. So
Gary, let me bring you back into the conversation. We've got about a minute left before break, but we're going to continue after that break. How do the election supervisors, how are they talking about this new elections police unit?
I think they're in a wait and see. I did want to add that there were some interesting things that Secretary Byrd said about this new elections police, this Office of Election Crimes and Security. He said that some of the things that he wanted them to do, one of the things he wanted them to do is he wanted them to investigate allegations of threats against election supervisors. That was one of the things that he told them point blank. He says, we need to get to check into this. Clearly, you know, voting fraud is apparently going to be part of the mission. But he also, Byrd also mentioned that he wants to look into allegations about petition signatures that were mm-hmm. falsified and things. So those are some of the things that he kind of threw out there. What I would dare say is I think the size of the unit, you know, approximately 15 and one in the Department of State and then another 10 in the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, not really going to be able to, you know, go monitor polls and,
right.
and be at polling places right. and stuff like right. that. Right. If you look at the way that they've set it up, it's more like they're going to handle complaints and then they are going to also do some independent inquiries. They have both powers.
Gary, stick with us. Gary Fineout with Politico. Dr. Lana Atkinson, director of FSU's Leroy Collins Institute. Want your phone calls about voting in Florida. 305-995-1800.
Support for the Florida Roundup comes from ABC Fine Wine and Spirits, family-owned and operated since 1936. Guests can visit 125 stores throughout Florida or shop online at abcfws.com.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening and supporting public broadcasting in your community. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. My co-host Melissa Ross is off this week. Talking about voting in Florida, the primary is still months away, certainly, but boy, there's going to be some changes for voters. Some of those include changes to vote by mail, changes to ballot drop boxes, changes to putting new restrictions on voter registration groups, and increased penalties for voting crimes. 305-995-1800, our phone number, 305-995-1800. You'll find us on Twitter at Florida Roundup there as well. Gary Fineout with Politico still with us. Dr. Lana Atkinson, director of FSU's Leroy Collins Institute, also along with us as we navigate some of this new water for voters and voting reform. Gary had reported on Florida County Election Supervisors meeting this week for an annual get-together. How are the election supervisors preparing for and implementing some of these more specific changes regarding the process of voting, vote by mail changes and ballot drop box changes, for instance, Gary?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I haven't done a full survey of all the supervisors on this, but this is what's some interesting thing is you've heard some supervisors, I think in particular, I recall hearing some comments from the Broward supervisor, Mr. Scott. Mm-hmm. I think that what he talked about doing was actually going out and establishing permanent branch offices in different parts of Broward County, that was one of the things that he was talking about doing. I think maybe that came up in testimony in the trial. And the reason he was doing that is so that he could justify having drop boxes because, you know, they tightened the law in regards to where the drop boxes could be and how they could be located. Well, there's ways to work around it, but it just requires you're going to have to set up a permanent office and you're going to have to spend money on it and things of that nature. So I guess you have some supervisors who are handling it that way. It's important to remember that there were some supervisors who kind of were handling Dropboxes the way that they thought the legislature intended it, or at least the way the Secretary of State initially interpreted the law, which was that they had to be supervised. You know, that was a big point of contention.
You had to have eyes on the box. Right.
Correct. You had to have eyes on the box and everything like that. So for some places, I think in some counties, so I think that's not going to be a big change. Now, I mean, there were those counties though that were allowing the drop boxes to remain, you know, as long as they had a camera on them, they were allowing them to stay operative all night. Obviously, that won't be the case going ahead, unless, of course, something. I don't think anything's going to happen with a lawsuit. I mean, I think the 11th Circuit basically they lifted the injunction. So
yeah, the lawsuit was the lawsuit against these voting reform measures that were passed by law. Initially, a federal judge put a stay on implementing these changes, and then that stay was overturned, and those changes are being implemented and can be put in place, at least right now, according to the appeals court. Dr. Atkinson, let me ask you, because critics have argued, even during the debate of these reforms, and certainly afterward with filing a lawsuit, that these changes negatively impact Black and Hispanic voters. How?
Well, I mean, theoretically, it can affect any person or any group of people who would have a harder time getting to those locations to drop their ballots off. So, for example, if you were working during normal business hours, perhaps your only time to drop the ballot off would be in hours when there isn't anyone present. And so that might affect certain groups of people more than other groups of people. And that might limit their opportunity to place their ballot into a deposit box.
Sam is listening. Go ahead, Gary.
No, I was just going to say that there was testimony during the trial in which the people who had sued had presented evidence suggesting, look, there was a great uptick in the use of mail-in ballots by minority voters in the 2020 election. And so they looked at they looked at who was using Dropboxes and where those Dropbox locations were. So the argument, at least made in the lawsuit, was this will negatively impact minority communities because they were heavily using these Dropboxes and using mail-in ballots in the last go round. Now, of course, the last go round was during the middle of a pandemic.
And the pandemic, of course, still continues. But much different situation here in the summer, coming up the summer and fall of 2022 versus what the conditions were like, the health conditions were like in the ability of medicines and other kinds of mitigation measures regarding COVID-19. Sam, listening in Daytona Beach, wants to talk about the drop box. Go ahead, Sam. You're on the radio.
Yeah. Hi. Best thing, let it keep the drop box that they had before, and just get police to monitor them. That's all, simple. Why remove something that was working all these years, you know? Simple.
Yeah, Sam's fix in Daytona Beach, to keep the drop boxes, but then have law enforcement monitor them. So Gary, those eyes are on those drop boxes. Did that enter into any of the debate and consideration?
Well, actually there was a lot of debate and consideration. And one of the things that I think that there was conversation about who should be supervising these drop boxes. Mm-hmm. And I think you had a lot of pushback, and I think it was eventually taken out of the bill, the idea of having any law enforcement being used to monitor the drop boxes, because I think there was a concern that that would have a chilling effect on certain people if there was a law enforcement person present right next to a drop box. So the people who are supposed to supervise the drop boxes are employees of the supervisors of elections.
We are talking about elections and the process and voting reform measures that will be put in place the next time you vote in Florida, in all likelihood, in the August primary, certainly, and in the general election coming up in November. 305-995-1800. If you've been voting in municipal elections, maybe you've already seen some of these rules, some of these being implemented in your community. 305-995-1800 at Florida Roundup on Twitter. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Let's hear from Paz in Fort Lauderdale, who's listening in. Go ahead, Paz. Thanks for calling. You're on the radio.
Hi, good afternoon. These same laws are existing. These same laws that are cutting voting rights exist in Georgia, exist in Texas. Harris County eliminated 80% of their drop boxes, and they are the biggest county in Texas. And so it really does impact minorities, but
it can be anybody. It can be white people who are poor. It could be Black people who are poor. The reason I was calling was not specifically because of that, but that is important to remember. And so who is being targeted is important to understand and know. Our governors need to try to help people vote. That is the whole purpose for voting in the United States. We cannot go to what's happening in Cuba, in Nicaragua, in Venezuela. We need to expand voting privileges, expand voting access to everybody.
Paz, I appreciate you.
That is called sunshine as well.
Called sunshine. Yeah, something certainly Florida knows something about. Paz, I appreciate you putting voice to that in Fort Lauderdale. We did see elections in Georgia, Pennsylvania, and elsewhere in states that have implemented similar types of reforms. Dr. Atkinson, any lessons learned from those primary elections that we've seen over the past couple of weeks in those states for Florida?
And they've gone really, really well. I mean, we've had just incredible turnout in Georgia, for example, just off the charts turnout for their primary campaign. So the changes did not affect access at all, as far as we can tell.
And Gary, any talk from the county supervisors as they look to their colleagues in other states, how some similar reforms have been implemented and practiced during a live election?
At least this week, I did not catch a lot of conversation about that. I mean, I think that there's still to see how things are going to turn out with everything from the way they're going to do canvassing and the potential challenges to some of the additional requirements for vote by mail. I don't have a sense that they have a good feel yet. I mean, there have been municipal elections, which has occurred, but of course, we really have not had a big election since the both level of these reforms. And the first test will be the primary, but of course, the real test will be the November election, when we would anticipate that you're going to probably have, I would imagine, at least 50-60% turnout for a midterm.
We're about 90 days or so away from the August primary, maybe a little bit less than that, Gary. Is it normal in this kind of process to be about 3 months away from an election and have the election supervisors be openly questioning with so much uncertainty about process and implementation of some of these rules that the legislature put in place?
Well, I think there was a lot of questioning last year, the first go around. I was
sure.
I was at the supervisors conference a year ago, and they were very much sort of agitated about some of the stuff that was going on, and they were less so this time. I think a lot of it is they're just trying to focus on getting ready everything. I mean, obviously, as you point out, they've got to get the. I think the biggest one of the biggest things that's been sort of potentially upsetting the apple cart heading into the primary was what's going to happen with the redistricting and the maps and, sure. and whether or not there was going to be any, especially for those supervisors on the northern end of the state. Right now, the status quo, the map that was passed is in place. So I think what they're doing now is they're focusing on making sure. Now, what I haven't heard, and frankly, it's something that I have to check into probably in the near future, is I did not get a chance to talk to them about how poll worker recruitment is going on. Yeah. That was a big problem in the last election.
Yep.
And so that's the question, is are they going to have the staffing in place to be able to have them? To be able to conduct the elections, I think that will be a big test.
Yeah. Gary, we got to say thanks and goodbye, but you're self-assigning yourself more stories here as we're talking about voting process. That's the way it works when you're a political animal and a political reporter. Gary Fineout, one of the best in Florida and nationwide, with us from Politico. Dr. Lana Atkinson, thanks for sharing your perspective as well as the director of Florida State University's Leroy Collins Institute. Each of you, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
Our program is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville, WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Natu Tway are the producers. Catherine Hobbs, the associate producer. Director of Radio Operations in Miami is Peter Meritz. Technical Director Richard Ives. Engineering help from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Elliot Rodriguez answers the phones. Theme music from Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at AaronLibos.com. I'm Tom Hudson.
Support for the Florida Roundup comes from ABC Fine Wine and Spirits, family-owned and operated since 1936. Guests can shop any of ABC's 125 Florida stores and get curbside service through abcfws.com.